Welcome back, folks. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show, on your source for cool jazz and more, WEAA 88.9 FM, the voice of the community. For the next almost hour, we're going to tackle a really deep issue here with Netanyahu coming to Washington, D.C., and with BDS being debated, I should say, in Annapolis. But on the way, I want to remind you the Mark Steiner Show and discussions like this are brought to you by MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, offering a full range of financial services. MeQ, Baltimore's credit union, has been helping its members and its community prosper for the last 80 years. When you invest in yourself, MeQ invests in you. Remember, it's a credit union, not just a bank. Belongs to you. Money comes back in the end. More information at www.mecu.com or steinershow.org is MeQ, Baltimore Credit Union's banner. So, Prime Minister Netanyahu of Israel is coming to Washington, D.C. today to meet with Donald Trump. And there's been a lot written about that meeting. What is in store? Donald Trump criticized the expansion of settlements recently. We don't know what the substance or extent of that and what that means, but that criticism did happen. But I think that in many ways the Israeli government's been looking forward to a Trump victory. We'll see what that means for all of them in this discussion. What's interesting to me is that we've talked about this in this program a lot over the last many years. I mean, I think that Bob Friedman, who's one of our guests today, and Ali Zagheb, who should be here shortly, is another one of our guests today, have been discussing and debating this issue on this program for the last 24 years. We have been covering it with some intensity. Bob Friedman and I, let me just say this, just because I think it's just as an opening to let you all know where we're all coming from. Bob Friedman and I met actually back in the 1980s when we were co-chairing the Friends of Shalom Achshav, the Friends of Peace Now here in Baltimore back in the 80s. A lot has transpired since then. People were looking for a two-state solution between Israel and Palestine. That was the watchword after the war of 1967. And it's interesting now when you see where we are that many of the main partners in Netanyahu's government have saying the two-state solution is dead. It doesn't exist. It cannot exist. That there should just be one Israel. Now, you're also seeing and hearing more and more Palestinian activists, the people in Palestine itself, saying we don't need a two-state. We need one state with equal rights. So one of the questions people have to wrestle with, which is not the question I think that Netanyahu and Trump will be wrestling with or others will be wrestling with, is two-state over? Is it done? Is it the past? Is it something that cannot be attained when you have when you look at this, and I'll close with this and then I'll open it up to my guests. And this is just a question I'm throwing out here. But when you look at just the stats, there are over 600,000 settlers now in the West Bank, in what is Palestine. There are 2.9 million other Palestinians who live in that territory, mostly Christian and Muslim Palestinians living in the West Bank, not counting the others who live in Gaza, which is almost 4 million or so people. If you look at Israel itself, around 8.1 million people living in Israel. Of those, at least 1.6 million are Palestinian Israelis, or Arabs, Christians and Muslims living in Israel proper. So given those stats and the growing populations in both places, given the battle over Jerusalem, given the way there's hardly any contiguous territory left inside the West Bank, is two-state gone? Are we battling and arguing over things that just cannot exist? Looking for your thoughts at 410-319-8888. Write to us here by email at talk@steinershow.org. You can tweet us at Mark Steiner. Log on to our Facebook pages. I'll check to see what you're saying. But 410-319-8888. We want to hear your ideas and thoughts. And there are four of you for this hour. So I'm going to ask all of you to kind of really make I'm going to interrupt every now and then, make sure the conversation stays pointed and we don't stretch out here as everybody has a chance to speak. Bob Friedman, let me let you begin.
Okay, Mark, thank you very much for inviting me.
Always good to have you with us.
The two-state solution is not dead. It's going to take some tough love from the President of the United States. Of the 600,000 settlers that you mentioned, the vast majority are in settlement blocks. And if you go back to President George W. Bush's letter to Ariel Sharon in 2004, the understanding was that those settlement blocks would stay, and then there would be land swaps between Israel and the Palestinians. That can still be done. Settlements have been evacuated in the past. They were evacuated from Gaza, number one. Unfortunately, that didn't bring peace. They were evacuated from the northern part of the West Bank as part of the Gaza deal. Amona was just evacuated. The dilemma is, and I just want to underline this, that with Netanyahu in coming to the United States now, unless he gets tough love from President Trump, who's hinted that more settlements aren't good, then there will be an effort by the people on his right in Israeli domestic politics, mainly the Jewish Home Party of Naftali Bennett, to proliferate settlements on the West Bank. And if that happens, the two-state solution is dead, but it's not dead yet.
And let me introduce Jody Zissou, is that right?
Zissou McLean, yes.
Zissou McLean, who is a member of the Jewish Voices for Peace and Freedom to Boycott Coalition. I didn't say this earlier, but Bob Friedman is a former president of Baltimore Hebrew University and now visiting professor of political science at JHU. Jody.
Yes, thank you. Good morning. So I wouldn't presume to decide for the Israelis whether a two-state solution is possible. What I would say in this conversation is that I do consider it my role as a proud American Jew, born and raised right here in Pikesville, to stand up for the rights of Palestinian people in whichever way an agreement, which hopefully would bring about peace, which doesn't exist at this point. I think it's terrifying to me in an era of Trump. And I would say that Trump and Netanyahu look to me like two sides of the same coin. They're tweeting at each other. Netanyahu is tweeting directly that President Trump is right. He built a wall along Israel's southern border. It stopped all illegal immigration. Great success. And it's been corrected by some of my friends and comrades with If Not Now, who have basically said President Trump is crossed out wrong, that the wall was built to stop refugees trying to survive. And this is a moral failure. So literally using the same language that Trump is using about building a wall and certainly building more settlements is clearly not going to help move us towards a solution that would bring about peace and real human rights for Palestinian people in Israel and also in the territories.
Howard Libet is a executive director of the Baltimore Jewish Council. Howard, welcome.
Well, thanks for having me. I think a lot of what Bob said is absolutely right. I hold out hope that a two-state solution remains possible. I think we've seen mixed signals from President Trump in the last 6 weeks, 8 weeks as to where he is. I think tomorrow's meeting should be very enlightening in terms of where things go. But again, it's a process where everyone needs to get back to direct negotiations. The great frustration is the number of times over the last 25, 30 years where it felt like we were so close to coming up with some kind of a peaceful solution. And time and again, quite frankly, the Palestinians walked away from the bargaining table, decided they didn't want to move ahead with an agreement. And then we see just yesterday a very hardline military leader from Hamas appointed to a very high-level position in Gaza, which just suggests that the Palestinians are pushing, again, for more conflict. And we need to find ways to get back to a bargaining table for direct face-to-face negotiations.
Well, let me just ask you this question, Jody, and you all can chime in. And Ali will be here soon. I'm sure he will chime in as soon as he gets here. Can we put all the onus of why this hasn't worked over the last 48 years? Is that right? 50 years? 50 years at the doorstep of Palestinians? Is that fair to put it all right there?
I think it's pretty disingenuous to talk about this as a conflict between equal parties. So I will say I'm an international studies major from Goucher focused on Latin American region. And as an American Jew in our context here, where it is actually a pretty big risk to step out and speak for Palestinian human rights, I have started getting myself more informed over the past 5 years. So I will not say that I am the human rights expert, though we are working with Middle East experts and legal experts as part of the Freedom to Boycott Coalition. But I will say it's clear to me, and I've been to Israel a couple different times, trying to have my eyes open just as when I drive around the city of Baltimore and try to have my eyes open about what inequality looks like. It's clear to me that when there's 50 years of occupation, Palestinian people without access to water, siege in Gaza last summer with thousands of people killed, including a quarter of them children, which we all saw on the news, to then say conditions exist to sit at a table and have equal discussions for peace between two equal parties when Palestinian people are living under occupation in a state that's appearing more and more to be an apartheid state, also given Palestinian people and people of color and how they're treated in Israel. So to frame it that way is pretty disingenuous to me. I think a precondition to peace would be what we're demanding with boycott, divestments, and sanctions would be ending the occupation.
So I do want to come to open the phones and come back to the boycott, divestment question in a moment, because it's gonna, we'll be covering that again next week with a debate in the state legislature between different delegates. But do you want to leap in here, Bob? Or
Let me say a few words. First of all, it's disingenuous on the part of Jody to talk about the Palestinians in Gaza being victims, primarily because the war in Gaza in 2014 was begun with a series of rocket attacks from Gaza into Israel proper, and Israel was defending itself against those rocket attacks. And there was an attempt to avoid civilian casualties, which is never easy in a built-up area, but General Martin Dempsey, who was then the chief of staff in the United States, went over and said Israel did the maximum to avoid civilian casualties. That's number one. Number two, and I think this is an important point, a couple times we came very close to peace. In 2008, just before the Bush administration stepped down, there was an agreement to swap land between the two sides for 10,000 Palestinian refugees to come back to Israel, and it almost went forward, but at the last minute, Mr. Abbas, the head of the Palestinian Authority, with whom I have met, by the way, said no, and he refused to go forward with that. The other problem is, and here we get to BDS, is that the three claims of BDS, which are one, treat the Israeli Arabs better, number one, end the occupation, number two, which I agree with if it can be done, and number three, right of return of the Palestinians. If you have a right of return of the Palestinians, all 5 million of them, that's the end of Israel as a Jewish state. And that's a non-starter as far as Israel's concerns. So let's be very clear about that. And yes, there are problems with the Israeli Arab minority. Still, you know, 25% of Israel's doctors are Arabs. Their economic condition has gotten a lot better. Still, they could still do a lot better, and the Israelis have the dilemma with the Israeli Arabs, who are Arab citizens of Israel, as they prefer to call themselves, because some of their leaders are cooperating with Hamas and Hezbollah, who are sworn enemies of Israel. So, you know, how do you look at an Arab? As a full citizen of Israel or as a possible ally to your enemy, Hamas or Hezbollah? And that's very, very tricky, and the Israeli government is really stretching to try to deal with that problem.
So, Howard, let me let you jump in, but I'm going to come to Jody, too, and go to the phones. Leo, you're the first caller up, and I'm sorry that Jody's kind of sitting here alone. Ali should be here soon, I hope. And you all can join us here, 410-319-8888. Leo, you're on the air next. Let me just say, Howard, I mean, one of the things that – and Bob and I have had this discussion for a long time. I've heard the arguments for a long time on both sides here. But, you know, when we say an equal playing field, I mean, it is the Palestinians who are occupied.
In response to Israel being attacked, Israel didn't start the war of 67, didn't start the war of 73.
But has held on to those territories and taken land.
With countries that have been willing to negotiate directly, there is peace currently with Egypt. There is peace with Jordan. There are relationships there. There are trade relationships. As Bob referred to, there have been multiple times where we got very close to reaching agreements with the Palestinians.
But let me ask a question.
Sure.
This is an open question here, then we'll open the phones here. And Leo and is the next caller up. We're going to get right to your call here. I've been wrestling with this issue for a long time. How does Israel survive as an occupying power when you go to the West Bank, it's all chopped up. Nobody can move around if they're Palestinian. Can't move from one place to the other without being stopped and checked, without being harassed every day. And then people kind of go, well, why are people blowing things up? Why are people getting so upset about what's going on? And even when the protests are nonviolent, there seems to be repression. So the question is, how can a state like Israel survive as an occupying force?
When Israel turns over Gaza to Palestinian control, look what happens. Hamas takes over. and rocket attacks become a regular part of life, that the that you need a stronger Palestinian government that negotiates in a peace agreement that ensures peace and security for Israel. When you have a people who won't recognize Israel as a legitimate country and continue to seek to undermine Israel, you need leadership among Palestinians willing to step up and make peace.
But you also have, Jody, inside of Israel proper, leadership inside the government who doesn't recognize the right of Palestinians to have a state.
Right, and we're also erasing...
I mean, it goes both ways here.
We're also erasing the history quite literally in Israel. People who want to commemorate what Palestinians call the Nakba, which is commemorated the day after Israel Independence Day, even the creation of the State of Israel, the way we're taught about it as children growing up in Jewish communities here is that it was a land for people without a land without people, and that's not true. There's how many Palestinian refugees even from that time? And so to erase that history and literally plant trees over it and pretend villages weren't there is not giving us a full picture of what has gotten us here. We need to study that history, and along with Jewish Voice for Peace and Baltimore-Palestine Solidarity, we will be doing study leading up to Nakba Day this year about that history.
So let me open the phones here, and we will come right back to our guests and let Bob jump right back in at 410-319-8888. Let's go to Leo. You're on the air.
Yes, good morning. Mark Steiner.
Good morning, Leo Burrows. How are you?
I am wonderful, and good morning to all your guests. I have a point of view which I can share briefly, and that is that I do think it's possible to have a two-state solution. That is the preferable and sane thing and fair thing to do, but I don't think that Donald the actor Trump, and I call him our German-American president, I don't think he has any intention of promoting a two-state solution. I see Donald the actor Trump as a right-wing racist extremist, and I see Benjamin Netanyahu, the prime minister of Israel, in the same light. A very extreme guy who will, we've called him the butcher of Palestine as a result of what happened in 2014, what was it, 2,000 Palestinians who were slaughtered and murdered. Israel has overwhelming military supremacy. They have the Iron Dome, do they not, with the help of the United States. And I don't see any incentive on the part of the Netanyahu government to compromise at this point in time. So where are we going? It looks like we're heading toward another bloodbath unless there's a miracle that intervenes, given the continuing settlements on the West Bank on the part of the Israelis. The powers who control Israel don't want a solution, do not want a nonviolent solution to this situation. And it works in terms of the realignment politically in that area because they want to isolate Iran. Don't forget that. And they want to, the Russia, this is a realignment with Russia and the United States and all that implies in that region. So we need to pray a lot, but I don't see a lot of hope, but I'm hopeful that it will change in the right direction.
Leo, always good to hear from you.
Can I also jump onto that, too?
And then we'll go right to Bob and then take a break for news and come right back.
Within the current context, if people are making phone calls in protest of Trump's appointments to add to this to call against Friedman as the ambassador, he is using really divisive, messed up language, calling basically Jewish liberals with J Street, who are fighting and working for a two-state solution, capos and Nazi collaborators. Very right-wing appointment, and we know there's many of them people are calling about, but add that to your calls if you're out there fighting every day.
And Bob, we have a couple minutes before we go to news, and then we'll come right back to Howard Libet and the rest.
On that one, I agree with Jody. I think David Friedman is probably the worst possible ambassador.
And no relation.
And no, he spelled his name F-R-I-E-D. Please, I spell it F-R-E-D. And also, I am a member of J Street, so although on the right wing of J Street. So I certainly appreciate it, but he's invested in Bethel, which is one of these communities outside the settlement blocks.
He's probably the strongest voice for proliferating settlements anywhere in the administration. So there I do agree with Jody. But with your caller who said Palestinians were slaughtered in 2014, you're forgetting a rather basic fact. Hamas rules Gaza. Hamas is dedicated by its charter to the destruction of Israel. They are trying and have fought three wars against Israel since they seized Gaza in 2007. And when you start a war, there are casualties. So it's very disingenuous to talk about Palestinians being slaughtered when Hamas started the war.
But what about the issue? We'll come back to this. What about, and I don't want to get stuck on the Gaza war because I want to talk about where things are going to go from here. But I mean, again, that much of what you just said was real and true. The other side of that, though, is that Israel has stopped Gaza from developing economically, has stopped Gaza from building its own port or airport or anything else that would allow it to develop at all economically. And so, I mean, clearly Palestinians are divided deeply, but so are the Israelis divided deeply. I mean, just think about this before we go as we go to news break. When you look at the Washington Post this morning and you see Naftali Bennett, who is the education minister, saying that to Netanyahu, you cannot raise the issue of a two-state solution. This must not be said. This is our test. When you have the intelligence minister, Yisrael Katz, saying on army radio in Israel, whoever talks about a Palestinian state does not live in Israel's real world. There is general consensus among the public. There's no way to reach it. We don't want it. I mean, this is part of the reality. But let me we have to take a quick break for news. We'll come right back and we'll tackle that. Ali will be in the studio and we'll go back to the phones. And we have Sammy, who's our next caller up. Stay with us. Welcome back, folks. We are exploring what's happening between Israel and the United States and Palestine. Netanyahu's in the United States, about to meet with Donald Trump. And we are here with Bob Friedman, visiting professor of political science at Johns Hopkins University, former president of Baltimore Hebrew University. Dr. Ali Zagreb is in the studio. He is a Palestinian-American businessman who has been very active in Palestinian life the whole time, his whole life, whether living there, here, or when he was shown the Alamy Bridge and came back as a young man. He and Bob Friedman, I should say, have been on the show discussing and debating this issue for the last 24 years on the Mark Steiner Show.
Hi, Bob, by the way.
Hey, Ali, good to be with you again.
Man, I thought you would be here.
Next time.
Howard Libet is in the studio, executive director of the Baltimore Jewish Council. Jody Zissou-McLean is with us. She's a member of the Jewish Voices for Peace and Freedom to Boycott Coalition. And you all are 410-319-8888. We'll come right back to the phone. Sammy, you're the next caller up. But Ali, I'm glad you get here. Sorry for the miscommunication. I'm glad you're in the studio.
Thank you.
Let me ask you this. What I posited at the very top of the show was, and you and I talked about this the other day at dinner, was the question about whether two-state solution is dead. And I read a couple of quotes before you walked in the door. I could read Palestinian quotes as well, but a lot of Palestinians now are saying we should just have a state where everybody has equal rights inside that state. And then you have people like Naftali Bennett saying that Netanyahu must not raise the issue of a two-state solution. This must not be said. This is our test. The earth will shake if he raises this issue. The intelligence minister, Yisrael Katz, says whoever talks about a Palestinian state today does not understand they live in the real, does not live in the real world. There is a general consensus the public has no way to reach it. So, and I talked about the populations in both Israel proper and in the West Bank, in Palestine and Gaza, of the numbers of Palestinians, but also the 600,000 Israeli settlers who live in the West Bank. So is a two-state solution still possible from your perspective?
You know, I think anybody who is interested in peace in the long run, I'm not talking about next week or next year or even next decade, but anybody who is interested in peace in the long run between Arabs and Jews, between Palestinians and Israelis in the West Bank and in Israel, West Bank, Gaza, and Israel, that is the only solution. There is no other solution.
The two-state.
So it may take a new generation, it may take a new administration. Hopefully Netanyahu will be over and finished in the next election. And hopefully the Palestinian leadership also will advance and become more, I would say, adept to dealing with the world. We have, with all due respect to our Palestinian leaders, they are not doing a job that they should be doing, which is building bridges, which is doing whatever possibly can be done to also assure the Israeli public that we are real, we want peace, we want to live next side to you guys. We want to have two states, one for us and one for you, and we'll be cooperative with each other. We'll live as good neighbors. So I blame Netanyahu, of course, more so than the Palestinians, but on the other hand, the Palestinian leadership has been incompetent when it comes to that issue also. But how can Israel keep controlling 2 to 3 to 4 million, 5 million Palestinians as second, third, and fourth class citizens? How can Israeli boys and girls who join the army from the age of 18 till they die 70 or 80 years old live as occupiers, live as one Israeli soldier could go to any village, it could be 10,000 people, and he could put everybody on hold, get every man and woman from their houses, go to the playground, and he would keep them there for a whole day without being able to go and get a drink of water. The Israelis do not want that either. So I do believe it is the only solution.
But how do you see it happening, then?
Change in leadership. Change in leadership.
But, where does that change in leadership come from? The Israeli people are voting for the right wing. The Palestinians are not voting for anybody, really, and they have this power in place that is kind of immovable. So where does that change come from?
I think when you look at Israeli government, as we know, the parliamentary system they have, it's really complicated as a means to elect a coalition government that wants to push for peace. But it has happened. There were previous leaders of Israel who, based on their record in the military, based on what they'd done in generations or decades ago, you never would have thought they would bring Israel as close as they did to kind of land swaps, to making swaps peace, to getting that close to an agreement. So I hold out hope. Yes, we know that Netanyahu has certain views and he's pushed on the right pretty hard, but the Israeli government, just like the American government, as a democracy, goes through different cycles. And I hold out hope that we'll get to the stage at some point where the Israeli government, maybe it's under Netanyahu, maybe it's under a future leader, is able to build the bridges, work with Palestinian leaders through direct negotiations, and find a solution.
Can I jump in here, Mark?
Let me let Jody have a say, and then I'll let you come right back in, Bob. Go ahead.
Okay.
Jody?
So I think for us sitting here in the United States, too, thinking about what we can do as well, it's the reason why I'm out here publicly speaking for boycott, divestment, and sanctions, because I think as part of our democratic system, us putting pressure on our government in this process to stand strong, to work for Palestinian rights and peace.
Bob?
Yeah, first of all, you left out one rather important player in the Israeli government, Mark, and that's Avigdor Lieberman, who is the defense minister. And Lieberman has come out clearly for a two-state solution. And the problem with a one-state solution is that you're going to have you're asking for intercommunal conflict if you have a one-state solution. Now, I find myself, and not for the first time, agreeing with my friend Ali that the two-state solution is the only way to go. The dilemma, and this is what really bothers me, is the two times Israel has withdrawn in the past, once from southern Lebanon because that had been used as a base for attacking Israel, and once from Gaza, instead of peace with Lebanon, it got rockets. Instead of peace after withdrawal from Gaza, it got rockets. And that shifted the Israeli public to the right. And again, I agree with Ali, if you'd had maybe a little more forthcoming Palestinian leadership, and Abbas, sadly, was too weak to do it, and he couldn't make it anyway as long as Hamas controls Gaza, and he controls the West Bank, because if he made peace with Israel, Hamas would undermine it. You've got to have, first of all, reunification of Gaza and the West Bank. This would also strengthen the Palestinians. Then negotiations, hopefully, with somebody like Lieberman, who believes in a two-state solution.
Who also is one of the most racist people in the Israeli government. who's made some of the most racist statements about Arabs and Palestinians of anybody in the Israeli government.
The point is, if you look carefully, since he became defense minister, he's been extremely careful in all the comments that he's made. And he strongly opposed this proliferation of settlements that Naftali Bennett is pushing for. He said, wait, 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 let's talk to the administration of Trump and let's clarify it. He lives on the West Bank, and he said publicly he'd be willing to give up his home on the West Bank if there was a two-state solution that worked through with Israeli security.
I mean, but you see, it seems to me that the part of the problem is, well, from the phones here, I'll let you jump right back in, Ali, that the onus is always, in these discussions, always seems to be put on the Palestinians. It's always on them. And that doesn't seem to make any sense to me.
I don't really think Bob means to do that, although indirectly you said that, Bob, when you mentioned about Gaza. Gaza is living under one of the most oppressive occupations in the whole wide world. People cannot go and do their own fishing, you know, half a yard from their beaches. People cannot go to Egypt to even get any kind of medication. People are accepted in universities in the Middle East and in Europe and in the United States. They are not allowed to leave Gaza. So Israel did withdraw its military force from Gaza, but they have it. It is like the people in Gaza are living like in a trash can, basically. They have literally no way out. It's impossible for them to leave Gaza. So when you pressure people so much, believe me, you are not going to expect any cooperation from them. And if we look, when was the last time Gaza lobbed any kind of grenades or anything into Israel that really meant anything? There are extremist elements, unfortunately, in Gaza who do not even understand the welfare of the people in Gaza. So they go and do these stupid things. But when was the last time anything from Gaza hit any Israeli and caused any damage? So that is what we need to talk about.
Before I turn to Howard, and they said a word in a few minutes, I'm going to get you in here. I'm going to go to the phones. I'm going to read this Facebook message that came in from Jason Rodriguez, who wrote in, when will this stop? It's like two little kids keep fighting in the neighborhood, and when you get a hold on the two kids and break them apart, the two kids said he started it. When will this stop? One of these kids needs to grow up and understand the region cannot survive without cooperation from everyone. The region should grow in harmony, not with separating and oppression. That's a Facebook message from Jason Rodriguez. 410-319-8888. Sammy, you're on the air. Hi, Sammy. You there?
Can you hear me?
Yes, you're on the air.
Okay. I have a lot to say, but I'll start with my question and see if there's more time afterward.
Go ahead.
My question is to Bob, and people like Bob. I want to ask him, what is it about BDS, about the one-state solution, that scares him and people like him so much? The thing with the two-state solution is that it does not fully address all the problems of this conflict. And the state of Israel is created. It created three injustices inflicted on the Palestinian people: refugees, unequal laws for Palestinian citizens of Israel, and the military occupations. BDS addresses all of this. The one state addresses all of this. But for some reason, when I ask this question, people say that these things, they threaten the Jewish nature of the Jewish nature of Israel. They will decrease the Jewish majority of Israel proper. And you know, it raises questions, and I want your viewers to ask themselves, why is it okay to have a Jewish state that needs to maintain a Jewish population, preferential treatment of one people over another? And it's not okay for us to have, let's say, a white Christian state. Because if we maintain that ideology in one country, and when we're fighting against it in another, there's some hypocrisy there. Now, is there still time for me to speak?
Well, no, but let me go to some response from my guests.
Sure.
We have a lot of callers.
Yeah, of course. Yeah,
Mark, if I could respond to that. First off, Israel was founded as an ethnic Jewish state, not as a religious state. And one of the problems I've seen in the past is, particularly with my Arab colleagues, they have difficulty in seeing Israel and the Jews, and they can't separate religion. And they see religion, but not ethnicity. So that's the first thing. The second thing is simply a matter of numbers. And if you have the return, at least in theory, of 5 million Palestinians added to the 1.2 million Palestinians living in Israel, then the essence of the idea that Israel as a Jewish state, the same way France is a French state or Germany is a German state, with minorities, to be sure, that disappears. And hence the whole foundation of Zionism disappears.
So
and that's
well,
one of the big problems with BDS. And they end occupation, absolutely. I agree 100%. That's why I'm a member of Peace Now. That's why I'm a member of J Street. But you end the occupation, you don't end the state of Israel.
So let me go to Jody and Howard. Sammy, I'd love to have you join in more, but that would make five guests, and then we would have, nobody have a chance to say anything. But I do apologize for that. Jody and Howard.
I mean, very simply, supporting BDS for me is about putting pressure on Israel to change its policies. Nobody is saying, tell Israel to stop existing. And I think launching that charge is false. I think us really actually learning the history and not listening to the propaganda we're getting. Growing up, I was literally told Palestinian people did not exist, which I, of course, now know to be true. But I was told that in Hebrew school in Pikesville. So censoring the issue and not talking openly about our different options is not the solution.
Unfortunately, the founders of the BDS movement are about ending the Jewish Democratic State of Israel. There are people here in the United States and elsewhere who have said, oh, no, it's about pressuring. But ultimately, those who are behind the movement want to end the Jewish Democratic State. And that's why the General Assembly is now considering legislation that would place Maryland's economic might against companies that are engaged in this discriminatory boycott of Israel.
Gentlemen, let you respond.
So I have been working with Jewish Voice for Peace for many years now. I know a lot of the leaders, and it's just not true. That's not the goal. You can clearly read what Jewish Voice for Peace stands for, what BDS stands for, and we're having great success, which is, I think, why a lot of Jewish institutions who are who don't want to be supporting Palestinian rights in this conversation and are fine with putting the rights of Jews above, and that's not okay. The fact that I could go tomorrow and decide to move to Israel and would be accepted, where people who have been kicked out, who are Palestinian, off their land, don't have the right to return. There's no way this situation can sustain itself.
Allow me to go back to what Sammy said about the one-state solution, please. I think if we all were living in an idealistic kind of life, a one-state solution would work beautifully, and we'd go to Plato's Republic and, you know, have a beautiful life, all of us. However, the reality of things is very, very different. I do believe that the Jewish people, after all the suffering they went through during Hitler and even before Hitler, during the Inquisitions and this and that, I do believe they deserve their own state. Let them run their own state the way they see fit, the way it suits their own purposes. But, and this is a strong but, capital, three letters, but they have no right, none whatsoever, neither in the Talmud nor anywhere else, to control other people's lives. And that is why, as a Palestinian, I want the Palestinians to also have their own state next to the state of Israel. Hence, the one-state solution, I don't think it's, no matter how ideal it is, it will never work. The two-state solution, and you know, you mentioned military leaders, Rabin, you know, was one of the greatest leaders that Israel, unfortunately, Yigal Amir didn't like him, and he killed him. But there are Israeli leaders who served in the military who are very honorable human beings who also realize that the Palestinians deserve their own state. And maybe Avigdor Lieberman, as Bob mentioned, maybe he is, you know, improving with age like good French wines, and hopefully he is, you know, trying to be more realistic. Sometimes when you are a responsible leader, like the Minister of Defense in Israel is the most important job after the Prime Minister. So maybe now he realizes it is time that we do work to having two states instead of one.
Go ahead, then. I'm going to get to the phones here.
I just want to make sure we don't run out of time before getting at some of the concrete pieces of the bill. And I would say boycott is recognized as a form of protected free speech by the Supreme Court. This is something that we can do here locally. And also, it violates the First Amendment for governments to discriminate in contracts as well. The BDS movement goals, you can look who is supporting this movement right now. For freedom, justice, and equality has been supported by Desmond Tutu, Alice Walker, 7 major church denominations, artists, cultural workers, and now NFL players who have spoken out publicly against going on a trip that was to be part of the propaganda of blind support of whatever the state of Israel does. So things are changing. Even opposing this bill is not necessarily an endorsement of the BDS movement, but a defense of political dissent and rights that we know are more crucial now than ever. So I definitely encourage people to look at the bill. It's very vague with criteria that will be used to put people, individuals, on a blacklist. And also even big companies, in the bill, the language is also in there about settlements. It's very vague and it's unconstitutional.
I do believe that the Maryland State House, whatever it is, should not be involved in the Middle East. The Israeli-Palestinian conflict, even the United Nations with all it has, world leaders like Rabin and Arafat and Tony Blair and others were not able to resolve it. I do believe that our friends in Annapolis should stay out of this for the time being and just concentrate on improving the streets and the tolls and things in Maryland and ignore the Middle East at this point. I think that it behooves them to do that.
Quick closing, quick closing thought, Bob and Howard.
Yeah, my friend Ali, the problem with that is that just as Jody and others are advocating loudly for BDS in Maryland, others are loudly advocating against BDS. They have the free advocate against BDS the same way Jody and her team has the opportunity to advocate for it. The bottom line is, as I mentioned before, if one carefully looks at the program of BDS, the bottom line is that whether Jody understands it or not, this is to eliminate the state of Israel as a Jewish state. Bottom line. So my feeling is, and I don't know if we have time to talk about the Netanyahu visit at all, which I thought we were going to...
We were, but we'll run out of time, unfortunately.
Netanyahu, very quickly, if I can have 30 seconds, some of our listeners might be interested, is here for three reasons. One, to get cover from Trump so he can resist domestic pressure at home to proliferate settlements. That's number one. Number two, to reinforce the position of Mr. Trump, which is taking a harder line toward Iran than the Obama administration did. And number three, probably most important at all, and this might surprise some of your listeners, to try to reinforce the point to Mr. Trump that he has to play an active leadership role in the Middle East and not retrench from it the way the Obama administration did. And hopefully part of that active role will also be to make the great deal that Mr. Trump said and finally work out a two-state solution.
I will not hold my breath for that one, but Howard.
Let me just respond to this First Amendment concern raised by Jody. This isn't about political free speech. This is about the state using its economic might through pension, investment, and procurement contracts to achieve a desired goal. We've done it before in terms of prohibiting state business with companies doing business with Iran. We've done it before with prohibiting the state from doing companies that are doing business to prop up Sudan. We've seen the Supreme Court has ruled that, for example, the federal government chose to withhold dollars from college campuses that tried to boycott our OTC programs and ruled that that was perfectly legal. So we've seen 16 other states adopt this legislation. It's time for Maryland to help support a valuable trading partner, a valuable economic partner.
I'm sorry, the mix and match of this. We were not trying to get into BDS here today because I wanted to try to focus on this. A quick thought, Jody, so we really have to take a break. We have another segment coming up.
So our state already has a trade relationship with Israel. That's exactly the reason why our legislators shouldn't use its power to penalize people with dissenting opinions. This is not just saying the state is boycotting the boycotters. These are the government using the government funds and my taxes to give the power to disperse and use it as a weapon against point of views that they don't like. It's different. It's completely different.
I'm not an expert on BDS, to be honest with you, so I, you know what I'm saying is just, I think, common sense. I don't think that BDS wants to stop relationships with Israel. I don't think that they want to stop. We're talking about the settlements here. The settlements are illegal on occupied Palestinian land, and I think that is where the BDS comes in. They're not saying let's stop all relationship, commercial or whatever it is, with the state of Israel. They are just talking about illegal posts, illegal settlements in the West, in the occupied West Bank. Is that true or not?
We're going to come back to this on Monday with a debate on BDS, and we're going to take a break here in just a couple minutes and come to our next thing we have to do. I wish we had gotten to more of Netanyahu. We'll do that in the coming days, and we'll also come to back to BDS next week. Howard Libick, congratulations on becoming executive director of the Baltimore Jewish Council. Good to have you in the house.
Congratulations.
Nice to be here. Thank you.
Bob Friedman, always great to have you back with us.
Always a pleasure, Mark.
Bob, send me your number, by the way.
I'll give you after the show. That was Dr. Ali Zagreb. Good to have you back in the house, Ali.
Always a pleasure.
And Jody Zissou-McClain, great to have you in the studio, Jewish Voices for Peace and Freedom of Boycott Coalition.
Thanks for having me.
Take a short break, and we're going to take a less than political look. Well, no, some politics will be involved in the next conversation as we look at the Grammys. Stay with us. Mm-hmm.